everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about the movie Out of the Dark, which I've seen listed as both 1988 and 1989. Doesn't really matter. All we know is it's a good fucking time. It was picked by Brian, who, I'm going to bring this up again later in the episode, watched this on an airplane.
Yeah, that is wild.
Dude, I can't avoid boobies on an airplane. I try, and I'm like, this seems like a good enough movie that I can watch without being uncomfortable. And like, there is like, and it's not boobies in the sense of like a sex scene and like a nipple slips. It's like, I'm just going to be topless in a normal conversation for, yeah. And there's one scene in it that, not to jump ahead, but there's one scene in it where it's like, if someone were to look at my screen right now, they would genuinely think I was watching a Cinemax porn. Like, yeah. It was like,
oh, that sex scene is
the hotel sex scene is insane. And that's where I wrote the note. It's watching the scene that I remember Brian watched this on an airplane. So, Brian, let's give you the spotlight for a quick second to explain how this came to be, because we were supposed to watch something else this week. And you were like, I watched this movie and we need to make it the next movie in my pick and move everything else down in one.
So me and Jade watch horror movies together. And we had a different pick, which we won't say because it's going to come up soon. But I found this and I saw like the cover with the clown and it looked like a 2018 movie. So when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, this is like the 80s. So I like turned it off. Or I just put it in my add to watch list and then it's like I never really cared to watch it, so it gets put in my flights thing where I just download it and I'll watch it on a flight when I can't be distracted. And the reason I went with it was because I noticed that Divine was in it and I've been on a John Waters kick and I was like, all right, let's watch this garbage. And it is the biggest sleeper slasher like ever.
I think it
and
is
I think
too.
Scott said that in the group text. Yeah, like it is like, it's not the best slasher, but it is easily the best unknown slasher I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and the critics hate this movie. Like, I was, like, trying to find information on it.
It's so funny, though. It's hilarious.
It's, so when it came out, critics, and this is the thing. This is the thing that frustrates me with critics when it comes to horror. Like, they complain that everything about it was too predictable. Like, they're like, oh, the killer you could tell from a mile away. But then they also bitch if the killer doesn't make any sense. So, like, you can't please them mm-hmm. either way. But there's like maybe two websites I found where someone reviewed this movie on their website. And both times are like, this movie is a fucking diamond in a rough.
Yeah.
Like it is just no one's heard of it. And it's a blast. Yeah.
And there's like faults to it, which makes it more fun. Like it's
there
not
faults,
painful.
But fault. Like one of the reviews that I read, and I absolutely agree with this, is they said like there's nothing inherently special about this movie. Like it is just another slasher from the 80s, but the director clearly cares about it. And there's like this visual, like he just has this visual style that makes it stand out where it's like, it's not just the bland setup shots. And so like, he's doing interesting stuff visually. He's doing interesting stuff where you actually know all of these characters and care about them instead of them just being body count numbers. Like, it's very, it definitely shows that everyone involved in it really wanted to make something, not just, like, cash in on the horror trend.
I don't like cop procedurals, and I don't like thrillers. And this movie is kind of a thriller cop procedural, but I was never bored. And I agree with Matt that it's a really visually entertaining film.
Yeah.
Dude, that was one of the things where I was, like, shocked. I'm like, for a B, this is realistically a B horror movie, right? And, like, now, I don't want to say campy, but it's let's just call it a B slasher. Some of the editing choices, especially for its time, were so phenomenal. Like the amount of effort that it took. Like, and I think I brought it up when we were shooting the pilot. Like the car driving by, and as the car passed, it's transitioning to a scene. Like, yes, I can do that on Final Cut Pro today. In 1988. That is a tough fucking transition to do.
Yeah, because you're using celluloid.
Yeah, that is a long, daunting transition to do.
And I think that there was a couple really great editing choices like that. Ones that also drove the story along and like didn't take you out. Because, yeah, there are these influxes of slashers that are coming out mid to late 80s. And so many of them are very formulaic and garbage. And it's like, yeah, maybe the narrative wasn't like or was too on the nose or whatever those critics were saying, but it's also like the craftsmanship of the film is way above any of that other shit that we hold so like up and near and dear and like that we love for the sake of loving. But this is like a decent movie. It's like,
yeah, I had so few notes because I was just sucked in. I was just like attentive to it.
Yeah. I was watching it with Carly and both of us were like looking at each other like, this is not what we expected at all. Right?
The cast is fantastic. The opening credit song is so good and creepy. Like, it sets the tone perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if we're talking about the songs that bookend this movie.
Oh, dude. but also stay tuned for next week.
Yeah.
But I will say, immediately I get a laugh in this movie when Dr. Bozo is calling the first sex worker, and it pans to a
Bozo,
photo
it's Bobo, like, right? Dr. Bobo.
Yeah, Dr. Bobo. And it pans over to this picture of the girl, but with these big red lips and fake boobs drawn on to the
picture. Oh my God. What's my, is that, did you say that's your first note?
That's the first real big laugh that came out of me in this movie.
I draw boobs on all the pics of women I have. Totally normal is what I wrote down. Oh, shit, dude. You're missing the great first line. What's the music you're playing? Ooh, it makes me hot.
Oh, Scott, you're doing that seductive voice. And it does things to me. You got to calm down.
So do you want me to do it up an octave? Like, no, all the women are so breathy in this movie. I love the fact that I can't place another film I've ever seen about sex workers that is so – I mean, I know we've discussed some even, but – this movie just feels so real because they're like talking to these dudes on the phone and then rolling their eyes or like doing their nails or whatever. And it's just so fun because this movie really knows what it is. And that's what charms me about it so much. It's so charming because it's not John Waters like
camp,
but it has such a lighthearted like hair flip kind of going on.
The way that all the girls are on the phone is have any of you guys seen CB4?
No.
Yes.
I've seen the cover.
So one of the plot points in CB4 is before they make it as a rap group, the one guy works for a gay sex line and he's about to clock out and all of a sudden he gets another call and he just picks up the phone and goes, Yeah, I'm licking your balls. That's basically how like every girl is on the phone. Like they're so disconnected from what they're saying. They're looking at a checklist of things to mention. And then you get introduced to the one girl, Camilla. She's the newest hire and she's from Ghoulies 2 and she's gorgeous.
Oh, that's where I didn't even look her up. But yeah, she's great.
But yeah, I mean, the first point, you know, I'm already like kind of invested in the world because it is a very humanistic look at like girls who work these sex hotlines, and like they say that they're just struggling actresses. It's like a waitressing job for them. And then you get the first kill, and I was so weirdly invested in this mime baseball bit. Like I was just like,
I knew where it was going. I knew exactly where it was going, and it was still a great scene. It was just so fun because it defies logic that you'd see someone in a fucking clown mask in the dark with your dog and your dog's just chilling while you're playing mime baseball with a person with a real baseball bat. And then she's like, ha ha ha, smack on the fucking head. So great.
And then, you know, I have one line that I wrote down. I'm sure, Scott, you're the king of writing down all these lines, but some of my favorite line from any of the girls talking on the sex hotline is fire some of that. What was it?
Oh, I have that one too. Yeah.
Fire some of that love in my direction.
Oh, no. Give me a throbbing muscle of love. But then the Camilla
auditions her sex scene.
Yeah. Okay. So let me pause our discussion for one quick second. Listeners, I am 100% sure you haven't seen this movie. This is the point where you stop the episode. Watch it. It's on YouTube. I will post the link when we
it's
drop
on
it.
Prime. You can watch Prime. It pristine in Prime.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I paid $3 twice to watch this because I didn't finish it in the 48 hours because I was going to a wedding in PA and it was like wild, but I got it done. And
Why didn't you ask for my login? I told you it was free on mine.
I fucking have a login and I have Prime. It wasn't free for me. Anyway, I don't have a problem spending $3 twice on this movie. But anyway, stop what you're doing. Stop the episode. Take the hour and 30 minutes to watch this film and then come back and watch the rest, because while it's kind of campy and cheesy, we will spoil it. This is the first spoiler. This is your spoiler alert. Stop listening. Now we're going to continue. So, Camilla, I thought she was a survivor girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they invest so much time into her that her death is one of the most, the biggest surprise and saddening deaths.
Yeah.
That we've watched on the show in like a year.
But again, it's because they actually treat all of these characters as real people that you care about. Like, with the exception of the baseball girl, because you barely got to know her, all of the other people who die, you got to know for at least 30 minutes into the movie before anything happened. But,
I mean, and she's got, Camilla's got those.
So interesting. That baseball scene was so fucking interesting. Because not for anything, the rest of the kills, I mean, yes, like emotionally memorable, but the kill themselves, not all that memorable. The baseball one is like, yeah, we don't know the character so well, but damn, does that fire things off for Bobo, and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so Camilla's she's got those big brown doe eyes that she just makes so big, and she goes, you mean I tattooed my tushy for nothing? That's when I wrote, I love this movie already. So this is a little frustrating here because I'm watching it and I have to like stop watching it because I'm quasi in public for that smoke photo shoot.
Oh, that scene is nuts.
It's great in slow-mo, but then when you see her dancing around and doing kissy faces and blowing fucking raspberries with her boobs out in regular speed, you're like, this is so weird and uncomfortable.
On a plane.
On a plane. Because that's exactly what I was thinking. I was semi in public and I was like, oh, fuck. And you're on a plane. You're a captive audience. You have a captive audience around you just watching boobies.
So there's a ton of, Brian already mentioned Divine. There's a ton of cinema people in this.
I did not.
It's out of drag. She's the big fat detective that talks to the other detective
at the hotel
with the bad mustache at the hotel.
And it's also funny because it's you're watching a guy playing a woman playing a guy. And I think you have to watch like Divine to know Divine to have that feel. And maybe it's just that, but like, she's still got like the Pink Flamingos Divine sass, but just with like a mustache on.
And you know, the weird thing is that this was Divine's last film.
I know. Yeah,
it was this and Hairspray came out the same year, I believe.
Yeah, but this came out after Hairspray.
After.
And then she died.
But also in the list of cult cinema people popping up in this movie, the red herring David is played by Bud Kurt from Harold and Maude. He played Harold in Harold and Maude.
Thank you. Ugh. I didn't have time to look on IMDb who these people were. Yeah. And that, thank you so much.
Yeah, and then the hotel manager is the dude from Gremlins 2 and Chopping Mall that's in all of those random B movies.
Eating
he plays
Raoul
Yeah, so like he's my favorite toupee. Character. Yeah, he's my favorite character in this movie. And he's great.
The detective is our boy Tracy Walder from Drowning Mona, which I love. But more importantly, Bob the Goon in Batman with Michael Keaton, who wasn't Beetlejuice.
That was two degrees, right?
I was wondering, dude, this movie, so we have that wacky-ass photo shoot. Then we have the most absurd of all the deaths, which is the shovel in the head.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's not that. But no, that's not so absurd as the I thought I wrote it down, but where the fuck is it? The Mexican widow. There's mariachi music in the background, and she's like with a horrible offensive accent explaining what happened, and then she's like, okay, gotta go.
Yeah. Are you guys from the TV? No. All right, bye then.
Yeah, so so weird. This movie is very off. It keeps you on your toes. I don't know how to put it in a nice way. It's not like gripping. It's entertainment.
No, but it's just captivating. Like,
yeah, it's captivating.
So,
thank you.
So I was watching it and we were supposed to go. My sister just got engaged and we were supposed to go and meet her for dinner to like celebrate. So I was watching the movie and I got the text like, hey, it's time to go. And I was like, oh man, I got to stop mid movie.
Oh shit. Hold on. That went down. She got engaged.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Congrats.
Yeah.
So that's I hit stop on the movie thinking that I'm like 40 minutes into the movie and I was like an hour and 15 in. I was like, man, this movie fucking flies.
Yeah.
Like, I was just so hooked in. Now here's a question. Cause I was wondering if this was going to come up later on in the movie. Did any of you think that there was two killers?
Yes. I did. Yes.
Because of the camera scene, yeah. Right? Because he's clearly talking in the phone while he's choking.
Yeah, and I know.
No. It cuts to a, what's it called?
There's like, a tape player at the.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that part.
Yeah.
I missed that part. So I was like, what the fuck is happening? There's two of them.
I did. I thought that there were two of them even after the Bob the Goon or whatever gets run over. And you know who ran him over?
Who? Because that guy seemed familiar too, and I thought that it was Beef for a second.
No, Tab fucking Hunter.
Right?
That is, yeah. That's Anthony Perkins' significant other.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he and Tab Hunter and Anthony Perkins were basically together. Tab Hunter was a late 1950s teen heartthrob. And he wasn't allowed to be out of the closet in 1956 or whatever. But yeah, he and Anthony Perkins were like together for most of their adult lives.
No shit.
So,
and that's Tab Hunter.
So I have a really random question because I was looking through his IMDb and nothing jumped out at me, but he has this weird line where he goes, look at that watch. How much do you think that watch
costs? Yeah.
Is that a reference to something else that he was in?
No fucking clue. Anything? It seemed like it was put in there as a reference. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. But as soon as he said that, I'm like, I know that this movie is also like playing up the comedy a little bit, but that feels like I'm supposed to recognize that guy. And then that line, I'm supposed to be like, oh yeah, because he was in blank.
Yeah. But before that scene, we miss an amazing line, which probably wasn't intentionally a reference to Frank Henenlotter, but the one prostitute goes, want a date?
But yeah, so we have, I feel like the whole hotel scene is definitely the craziest. Beyond, like, we talked about that sex scene, which is just it's uncomfortably long.
But it's also a pretty hot sex scene because, like, you only get little.
And, like, the role, like, not the role reversal, but the power, like, reversal. And you got the texture light. And you're like, we're really going for it in this one, in this seedy-ass hotel.
And you have the hotel manager leading into that scene where the Kevin is checking in by himself. And he's like, you know, we have a lot of people that come here sometimes for an hour or sometimes for extended periods of time. But the one night only stay is rare. You don't have to sneak in there alone, sir. You can bring whatever woman or man you wish.
I don't like that one on the right. It has a certain ethnic quality. Shopping mall reference, just so you know.
I know.
No, not for you. Just clarify for the listener.
But yeah, the... like, it's just, and then the kill in that is like a really interesting POV kill. Mm-hmm.
You have it's like almost like a giallo.
You've got like that chopped up body inside the tub. The hotel manager licks the blood and smells it to confirm it's blood before going in. And he's still not suspecting something bad happened. There's fucking red water spewing out of
and
this.
He says, and I quote, these girls are so damned irresponsible.
Like, so he is the campiest character.
Oh, but that's who he is.
I mean, it's what he is, yeah.
But so who's the guy who is the big red herring, or the other red herring?
That's Harold from Harold and Maude.
Not the one who got run over.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The older guy who Karen Black used to be with.
Right.
You're also missing the fact that Karen Black from Black Christmas is in that. Karen Black was in, yeah. I love
Karen Black's great.
Jeffrey Lewis, the drunk mentor.
Yes.
Like the photography mentor. Who's
what's
also
he from?
He's from Salem's Lot. He's from Devil's Rejects. He's from Like,
oh yeah, he's in the band of Devil's Rejects. I forgot about that.
His whole speech where he's talking about the wedding, he's like the like overly suspicious. He's like, and then I got fired from that wedding. How'd you pull that off? How'd you get to him?
Like, wedding money is good money. Yeah. But after that guy gets run over, the drunk photographer goes, serves you right, you goober. when we get the denouement of it being the boyfriend, you know, because they actually go out to the desert and he's like, I could never hurt you like those sluts or whatever he says. I love that she shoots him and the squib work is great.
Dude,
and he gets like,
I said, holy shit, these squibs. And then the shotgun blast is
through the window. It looks so good.
Insane. Oh my God.
But I have to mention, I really want my last words to be something as meaningful and deep as, who could be calling at this hour?
Oh my God, it's so good. I posted it on our Facebook, and I won't spoil it on the actual episode, but The Intruder, which was just a mediocre movie at best, has my favorite final line of a movie in a long time. And this, I watched immediately afterwards, and then I was like, okay, well, maybe this is also good. But yeah, this movie, Brian, you know, I thought that you had really raised the bar when you had done Night of the Comet, but holy shit, like the bar is at its peak right now. I don't know how this is going to be like every movie that you pick, it's going to be like, yeah, but is it Out of the Dark? Like, Out of the Dark is the masterpiece you found for us.
And I'm going to tell you guys right now, it's not going to top. I'm not going to top it.
No, but also, no. Brian feels that way about me picking Black Roses in October.
Yeah.
He's like, man, I wish everything could be like Black Roses.
Well, and Scott, I feel like you feel that way about Phantom of the Paradise for me. Like,
nothing will ever mean
as much.
No, I love Phantom of the Paradise.
This is actually like bothering me, right? This is bothering me right now. I just need to get it off my chest now that Scott said something. Because I am for real. All
right, me against the world. It's me against the world.
That's on my normal playlist. Just like my normal Spotify playlist, that song comes up sometimes. I love Black Roses so much.
I wish that you collected vinyl because I would drop the cash to get you. I would get you and me both a copy of the Black Roses soundtrack. I had to buy it on DVD to watch it for our episode, right?
And me too.
Yeah, but here's the difference between you and me is I don't collect DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever. And I had it in the box for Pop Rock and Horror to sell it off at that next con. And then I was like, no, this is too special. So I'm keeping it. I have less than 20 DVDs and one of them is Black Roses. Anyway, so does anybody else have anything to say about Out of the Dark besides it's amazing? And I hope that the people that listened to this episode have watched it
great,
and agree.
Great clown mask that should be included when we talk about any clown masks.
I wish they would you know how Paul Bearer got the rights to redo the mask from Rocktober Blood and release it with the Rocktober Blood soundtrack? You know about that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, like last, I want to say it was November or maybe February this year, I was talking to them at Cinema Wasteland back in April about it, but they got the original mold for the mask that's on the cover of Rocktober Blood, which is a sweet mask. And so when you look on the inside of it, it actually has the original artist's stamp. It's a true replica, which is crazy. But I would love it if they did Out of the Dark's mask as like a limited edition run too, because it's a really great mask. This movie is such a forgotten film because it's got so much iconic shit in it. It's great.
It needs to be rediscovered. It needs to have like that Shudder pick it up, and then all of a sudden all the horror podcasts are talking about it, and then it like becomes like more well known, and then I guarantee you that mask gets
let's tag them. Let's tag Shudder on Instagram when we drop this episode. They'll bring it.
We will.
It might actually be on Shudder. Let me check.
No. Did I spend $6 on it?
Because I didn't have to pay for it.
The other thing I was
I got it on Prime for free, yeah. Brian. I don't know what Scott did.
Why did I pay for it?
Yeah, include with your Prime membership. Okay. What the fuck? So it's on Prime. I didn't know if it was on Shudder.
We have Prime. I don't know what
I think the other thing that I really surprised me, and I don't know enough about horror movies with clowns, but this was obviously post Killer Clowns. But as far as like clown killers in movies, I don't think anybody else has like talked or had lines or had clown puns or like anything of that ilk.
Serial insane clown killer right there.
Boom.
Isn't Scream from like 2002?
That was Sick was.
Yeah, it was like 2000.
2001. Like, I mean, I think obviously like Drive Thru was like 2004 and like.
Yeah. Oh, fucking Drive Thru.
Stop that. but like, I don't know any other clown killers that weren't aliens that like had all that like those punny lines or whatever. So and he also is like a Michael Shannon knockoff when he gets real crazy at the end. The lead, like he looks like Michael Shannon's kid.
When he's switching between Kevin and Bobo, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's wild. Wild. No more. What does he say? No more calls.
Bobo was just testing you.
Yeah, he sounds like Macho Man for a second, and then he goes.
Oh, did you? We missed a really great line that Bobo has. He goes, "She seemed like such a major leaguer on the phone." But I feel like watching this movie the first time through, I should have known that it was the boyfriend because he's like, "I want to see what the tit weather report is," and he's like, "Thanks for the mammaries." He's cutting up left and right. With his girlfriend, he's basically like giving it away. Yeah. So this is a pretty competent script when you
but
think.
But then
about
they
it.
Like mis- yeah, no, lead absolutely. You a different way because they make the lead cop such a dick that you don't even want to believe that he knows that homeboy is the killer. So it's like you get it twofold. You get it like wondering if there's a twist, and then you don't want to be on the side. Like I just don't think there's a movie that you have to take a secondary character and disagree with them in order to be like, oh, that's not the killer. Like the way that they like sort of strewn it about was so smart compared to other slashers where you're just given a character as the red herring. Like you're not like given, I don't know. It was like a weird mix of things that really took me by surprise.
No, but I was going to say what Kyle's saying actually makes a good point because it'd be like, take for example, like Scream. You know what I mean? Like they arrest Billy and Billy's a suspect in the beginning of Scream. But it'd be like if the second hour of Scream, every single time that Dewey's on like on the screen, he's just like, I fucking know you did it, Billy. Just admit it. Like it's like, but it's not. It's like, oh yeah, no, we proved he's innocent and he's free to go. And then there's like a twist. But this is just like, I fucking know you're the killer. And he's like, I swear to God, I'm not the killer. And then you as the audience is like, yeah, he seems to not be the killer.
For sure the killer. Like it's so clear. It was a really... It was a weird sort of twist because it wasn't what you were expecting to be a twist because it's not technically, but all the lead up.
It's so blatant that you're overthinking it.
Yeah, it's wild.
All right, well, let's dive into some double features. Brian, you pick this. You kick us off.
So I would pair this with another movie that I feel like is a sleeper slasher, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Oh, okay.
Nice choice. Right. Nice choice. Yeah. This was really, I had a really hard time. I was racking my fucking brain because this is such an out of left field slasher and kind of doesn't have the love it deserves. So I'm going to go with Killer Workout.
Nice.
Because it feels very similar. And I would actually do Killer Workout first to kind of prime you because Killer Workout definitely has a cult following that Out of the Dark does not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Kyle already mentioned my double feature in conversation, but I'm actually going to go with Killer Clowns from Outer Space for two reasons. One, the baseball scene really does feel like it could have been in Killer Clowns from Outer Space to a slight way. And unless I'm wrong, I believe they both came out in 1988. So it would have been a 1988 clown double feature.
Yeah, I think I'm almost positive that they're 88. Although I saw Out of the Dark as 1989 on IMDb, I think. But does not matter. Truly does not matter. Yeah. It's close enough for horseshoes.
I would do Eyes of Laura Mars. I think both films had like a really...
Eyes of Laura Mars?
Eyes of Laura Mars was one from the late 70s. John Carpenter wrote it. He didn't direct it. It's honestly, it doesn't have a lot in common, but the tone and the feeling, it's about a photographer, and they are seeing like they're predicting the future with the models that they're shooting. It takes place in New York, glamorous New York in the late 70s, and it's just like they sort of have a different environment and a different a similar environment but with like different content. And I just think it would be a really cool, and also it's just like that it's a gem that flies under the radar. It's a really interesting movie that doesn't get a lot of love. It's got a great disco soundtrack, I'll give you that.
I just read the I read the synopsis on Wikipedia, and this sounds incredible.
It's a really interesting movie that doesn't get a lot of love, and just like Out of the Dark. I mean, both of them are flawed. Both of them have things that probably people didn't dig when it came out, but definitely worth revisiting. And I know this one's sort of had a Los Angeles feel. There's two different environments. One's in Los Angeles and one is in New York, but both are photographers. Both are films that are not really talked about but have really interesting premises. Probably didn't get a lot of love when they came out, don't get a lot of love now. They're sort of middle of the road, but both really interesting films, with a lot of like cult and horror connections that people don't remember or know about. So
well, and for the last part of our podcast, real quick, what are some of your what is a recommendation from this week for the audience to check out beyond our highly praise of Out of the Dark?
Mercy Black.
All right.
Loved it. It's on Netflix. Matt did a great interview with Owen Edgerton, the writer-director. The girls that play some of the young characters in it are super sweet. They interact with us on Instagram and are just so appreciative of that. And that's Blumhouse, right? Like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean,
Blumhouse, and it's on Netflix for free.
Yeah,
so
it's a great, it's a great modern horror movie. I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah. It's hard to say what genre without spoiling
exactly
things. I'll say I finally got around to watching House with a Clock in Its Walls, which was Eli Roth's attempt at a PG horror movie.
Eli Roth.
Yeah. And it is the best Eli Roth movie that he's ever made. It's definitely flawed, as are most Eli Roth movies, but it's all of the fun stuff that you do like when you watch an Eli Roth movie, but with the sleaze part ripped out of it. And it's just like a good, fun popcorn movie because of it. So really recommend it. It came out almost the exact same time as Goosebumps 2. And Goosebumps 2 is really unwatchable compared to how good the first Goosebumps movie is. Mm. This feels more like a follow-up to Goosebumps to me.
Is Jack Black in it too?
Yeah, Jack Black's the star of this one.
Yeah, I love Jack Black as like a spooky kids movie star.
Yeah, he really is great in that role. And it's just got, you got like creepy ventriloquist dummies running around. You've got living pumpkins like vomiting up the innards of their pumpkin on people.
Oh, awesome.
Like, it's just a good, fun, gooey kids movie. All right, Brian or Kyle, whoever wants to go first.
I'll throw mine out there real quick. I watched a movie on a whim last night, never heard of it. I was looking for a movie for me and Jade to watch, and we went with this movie called Hot Summer Nights. It's an A24 movie. It's this guy's first attempt at a movie, and I really liked it. Not to give anything away, but the best way to describe it would be like The Way, Way Back, if instead of linking up with the water park, he linked up with the drug dealer. And it's like it's really good though. It's definitely more. No, that's it. Just check it out. I think it's really good. I don't want to give anything away.
I watched Better Off Dead for the first time.
Really?
I'd never seen it before. I bought it because Rob, when I was living in LA, Rob G loves this movie, and he suggested it to me when we went Blu-ray shopping one time. And he, I don't know, I like I've talked about on this podcast before, I don't have a lot of nostalgia or like care for a lot of the 80s stuff, especially those, what I assumed was a teen comedy that just sort of happened and took place and had some crazy hijinks. Like I pretended to like that stuff in high school because that's what you were supposed to do, and it doesn't now. You know what I mean? Like they're still fine mm-hmm. movies. Yeah. I just don't have the love that everybody else has for them. Better Off Dead is fucking cool. I had a great time watching that, and it is one that I will revisit and get to share with people.
Can I make a suggestion to you?
Please.
The director of that, Steve Holland, yeah. Made two other movies that are very much in the exact same vein as Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
He did One Crazy Summer, which is, in my opinion, I like it a little bit more than Better Off Dead. I just think it's funnier.
Yeah.
And then he made a movie called How I Got Into College, which is tonally exactly the same.
Yep.
It was after John Cusack had decided he didn't want to do those type of movies anymore. So it's a mostly unknown cast this time around.
Yeah.
And then he created my favorite show as a child, Eek the Cat, which I fucking adored as a kid.
I had a blast watching it. And you can see Savage Steve Holland's career trajectory afterwards and just see how he got into all the kids stuff and all, you know what I mean? Like it makes a lot of sense, like his directing style.
It's just so warped. It lives in a false reality, and that's what's so cool about it.
Yeah, and it's it doesn't question its own warped reality. It's just like, this is it. Like, it doesn't have to like wink and nod at being batshit like weird and just like so off kilter. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm sorry your mom blew up. That was Out of the Dark from 1988 as picked by Brian. So real quick, as always, run down the full spiel. Hit us up on all of our social media. You know where it is at this point, but it's almost always HMN Podcast. Also, go to HMNpodcast.com. Most people don't know this. We have an online store with shirts, and I'm going to make a special announcement that I made on the Facebook and our social media, but some of you don't follow us on there still because you're fools. If you purchase any piece of like memorabilia off of our store before episode 200 drops, you will get a free DVD from my DVD collection.
Oh, yeah.
It is extensive as hell, as all three of you on the phone can attest to.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be pulling all types of stuff. Side note, I am trying to get rid of a bunch of these wrestling DVDs I have. So if you're a wrestling fan, try to make a little note in there and I'll make sure it's a wrestling DVD that you get. Go to our Patreon at patreon.com/HMN podcast for all types of cool bonus content. Talking about Better Off Dead, we talked about Teen Wolf, another great 80s weirdo false reality teen flick. And tune in next week because we're going to work a graveyard shift next week. It's going to get crazy. We might even get boned. We'll be back next week.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.